Every time our athletes walk into this weight room, they're going to be pushed to the max.
Let's go! Let's go! Let's go!
The barbell hasn't changed in over 100 years. I can take a 25-pound plate, and we'll go out on the turf, and I'll have you hating life. We talk about straining your gut, pushing past that comfort level. I want a lot of energy.
What better breeding ground is there for being a success in life than the weight room?
Hey guys, welcome back to Iron Gym Chalk Talk. I'm your host, Ron McKeefrey, and this is episode number 235. Can you believe that, Brian? 235 freaking episodes.
No, I cannot. That is unbelievable.
Well, thank you guys for listening each week. I really appreciate those of you that like, share, and comment on these episodes. This helps me continue to highlight the great people that are in our profession. Also wanted to specifically thank our sponsors and VersaPulley for sponsoring this episode. You thank the world of those guys, Kirsten and the entire crew over there do a fantastic job. And if you're not using the VersaPulley, VersaClimber, I think you're missing out on two great pieces of equipment. So if you're in the market for those, check them out. This week, I'm excited. I'm joined by Brian Sippets. He's the founder and strength coach for Advantage Strength up in Michigan. He's a co-owner of Hockey Strength and Conditioning.com and has the Hockey Strength podcast. And we're about 20 minutes from each other when I was up at Eastern, but
yeah,
it takes me getting back down to Tennessee to be able to get you on the episode. Yeah. But appreciate it, man. Thanks for coming on.
Hey, thanks for having me. My voice might be a little bit in and out today, but I got my Coach McKeefrey voice going. So
that's a sound of a great strength coach right there.
Yeah,
I love it. I love it. Well, man, you have a unique journey. You have a unique story. I mean, a professional athlete, professional hockey player, they go pretty much straight into being a business owner. So rather than kind of talk about all the different stops or whatever, because you haven't had as many, what has been maybe that aha moment in your business career as a strength coach where you kind of made a big pivotal change in the way that you coach or the way that you interact with your athletes?
Well, as a coach, growth mindset, discovering the growth mindset and reading the book Mindset was huge for me in terms of just setting the table differently. It's basically a game changer in terms of how you view things, how you help others view things. And if you're not familiar with growth mindset, it's basically just framing the world in a way that says challenges are not obstacles to me, but they are opportunities to learn and opportunities to try new ways to do things. So when you learn how to frame things in your own life that way, and you learn how to help others frame things in that way, then it was a game changer for me. In terms of business, we have youth athletes, but we also have a good number of adult athletes as well. So, and by adult athletes, I mean just adults who move, the biggest kind of aha moment for me there was like people, adults especially, don't think of working out like I do or a lot of youth athletes. People don't care about, in my experience and the people that we work with, people don't care about how much they lift necessarily. They just want to move well.
Right.
And so I was talking about all the wrong things. I was way over explaining things to people. And for me, I'm like, God, people don't care about that. They literally just want to feel good when they move and they want to feel strong.
Right.
So that's been a big change for me in the last year or two here.
Yeah, I think I talk about this often. I give a culture presentation, and I talk about growth mindset versus fixed mindset, and how as strength coaches, if we don't believe 100% in a growth mindset, then we're in the wrong business. Because our athletes, they're going to come in with their ideals and their lens of viewing the world, a lot of different ways, and sometimes those are the wrong ways, and so we have to believe that people can change, and we have to believe that they can learn and adapt and grow as people. And too many times that we see an athlete that we maybe don't identify with, and we say, well, you know, that athlete will quit, or they'll, you know, we'll run them out of the program, or they'll, you know, they'll graduate in 4 years, rather than really pour into them each and every day. And I don't know about you. I can almost guarantee that the biggest successes that you've had in coaching, just like me, have been with those hard athletes, those athletes that were hard to reach that finally you did. And that's, I think, what coaching is all about.
Yeah. And I think, you know, if you hear all the time, like, there's this lag time between, you know, when you know you've had an effect on somebody. So you may not know when they leave, but 3, 4, 5 years later, when they come back, they say, hey, you know what, you really helped me accomplish this, or you really helped me get to this point in my life. And those are the really rewarding times. And me being, I've been out of hockey for 5 years now.
Right.
And so I'm getting to that point now where I'm starting to understand the effect that we as coaches have on the people that we coach.
Absolutely. Well, you're not a business owner unless you've made a lot of mistakes. What's maybe one of the biggest mistakes you've made, and kind of how you learned from it?
Oh God. It's just been a series of, and again, as a business owner, growth mindset, right? So it's just been a series of backtracks, right? So you go down one direction, figure out that doesn't work, back up, go the other way, figure out that doesn't work, back up, go the other way. It's basically, I equate it to sort of feeling my way through the dark. I have good mentors now and good people around me. The physical side, like the training side of things, I had very good mentors when I started. Daryl Nelson, who's with the national team program. I learned a lot from him coming out. And so that was huge for me. And then business side, gosh. I think it was, right off the bat, just thinking that I wouldn't have to have any kind of membership structure or whatever. I would just schedule. People would be flocking to the business to schedule with me, you know.
Right.
I was envisioning, three teams every hour, or teams starting every 15 minutes. And
right.
It turns out people aren't as excited. Like, in the private sector, training is like the other thing that they do. Very few teams put a high priority and just say, our season includes, in my case, on ice and off ice. There's very few teams that do that. So that was a big kind of wake up call for me. Like, hey, you got to go out and get people. You got to let people know you're there. So that's the whole marketing piece. And that's the part that I'm getting better at, I think.
Yeah, no question. Well, you spent your whole career pretty much in hockey. You know, what are some things that you think that are being done well when it comes to strength and conditioning for hockey, and what are some things that you think need to be improved upon?
I think hockey's done a really good job of, I don't know if I want to say leading in terms of making changes in training. I think, and this could just be totally my perception, and you can speak to this. I think what I view collegiate football as a certain kind of training, a certain kind of lifting, a certain really ingrained training style. And I think hockey has been really mobile because the community is smaller. Hockey has been really mobile and able to make changes quickly. And it travels quickly through the hockey ranks. So going to more single leg training, I think going, to not as much bar work and stuff like that. We've seen a lot of that happen quickly in hockey, and it spreads pretty quickly. I think the collegiate environment can be really tough to make changes in. I've never been in the collegiate environment. That's my perception. So maybe you could speak to that a little bit. But I just know I have a really distinct, and this is from my training experience as well. A guy you might know, Dan Dalrymple, was my strength coach in college. And we had a very significant or a very distinct workout schedule. We kind of knew what we were going to do, and it was pretty basic. And obviously that's the strongest I've ever been. But I think things are like more mobile now, and we're looking at more mobility rather than just brute strength. So I think the hockey community is small enough to where that can travel fast. And I think the website has a big part of that too.
Right.
HockeyStrengthAndConditioning.com. So yeah, that's the part that's interesting to me, I guess. And I think that's one of the advantages of being in hockey.
What do you think that is a disadvantage, or what do you think is something that you think that the hockey community really needs to improve upon?
I think we can understand a lot more about hip dysfunction and abnormalities. You know, FAI is a big thing now, and they're finding it not only in hockey players, but obviously there's a lot of studies for football players as well. And with such a hip dominant sport or such a unique action in hockey, I think we can know a lot more about the effects of FAI, the effects that are that people feel and that people aren't feeling. You know, it's going to affect the stride and the groin injuries and hip injuries that happen in hockey. We can probably train better, and I think we're on our way to that. But that's one of the biggest challenges, I think, is just knowing a little bit more about that and taking care of hips a lot better.
Let's dig into that a little bit. For people that don't know what FAI is, what is it, and what are some, you know, concerns that we should have?
Okay, so FAI, femoral acetabular impingement, is the basically, if you think of the cup that your femur sits in, either the cup overgrows, the rim of the cup overgrows and bumps into the femur, or a bony process on the femur overgrows so that it bumps into the cup. And sometimes there's a combination of both. But basically what it does is it limits hip action. And in a sport like hockey, where it's played low, right? So we rarely, and when you're skating, you don't really stand up, you're low. So you've got this violent lateral motion plus some kind of bony impingement there. There's a lot of stuff that can go on, and I don't know if it's something that you can solve. I know it's really, really bad for goalies. You rarely see a goalie who wants to play past 30 because their hips are just so beat up. But so it's asymptomatic in most people, but it's got it there. There's an effect. And I know personally, I'd like to know a little bit more about it. And there are guys who are good with it and who are kind of getting out in front of it. But I don't know if it's something that we can help or if it's something that's just going to be happening across athletics.
Right. Yeah. That would be my question, is obviously if it's, you know, skeletal, or, you know, if it's natural, how do you train around it? How do you prepare for it, or prevent, the chain, you know, affecting the chain, or however you want to say it.
Yeah. Well, I know it's prominent in football too.
Yeah.
So it's not just hockey.
Well, I think that's obviously, just like with anything else, is you got to have an understanding so that you can start to kind of ask the right questions, you know, right now, I mean, you're knee deep, I'm sure. What's a typical training week look like for, you know, a college, high school, hockey player?
So being in season right now, we obviously shift to more of an on-ice focus, and I think the lifts are definitely shorter. We work mostly on maintaining max strength. So, you know, the sets and reps are low. The workouts are quick, usually under 45 minutes, and they're out. We do very little power work in the gym. We do very little plyometric work, because depending on the coach you have, if you're the coach, then – so I coach a high school hockey team. We can take care of a lot of this on the ice, but we get our power work on the ice with sprints and high-level stuff that's going on in games, that's going on in our practices. So when we get here in the gym, it's a quick warm-up and, you know, get to the low-rep strength work, just so that we're maintaining that stimulus throughout the season. And that touches on my experience as a player. I did not do a good enough job, I don't think, in pro especially. Well, college was good because we had two workouts a week, guaranteed. Professionally, it's on your own, man. And it's hard, you know, you're getting into February and March, right? And it's really hard to want to get a lift in. So it takes a ton of discipline there, and I didn't know the training side like I do now, so I wasn't good at, you know, coming up with my own stuff. But I know that by the end of the season, if I didn't lift, I just felt like a bag of bones.
Right.
And so we're helping these guys stay strong throughout the season and even improve their strength throughout the season without adding a lot to the fatigue factor. So we're on the ice 4 or 5 days a week, and in the gym twice a week, off or in season. Off season, depending on the team, we're 3 or 4 days a week. And I guess I follow sort of like the Boyle style of training, where it's, you know, we might double up on a hinge and a push on one day, on day one, and double up on a pull and a squat or a knee dominant variation on the second day. And we just alternate those.
And that's in the off season or that's in the end season?
That's in the off season. Yeah. Yeah. 3 or 4 days a week.
So now you go on 2 total bodies during the week then?
Correct. Yep.
How do you address, you know, obviously, you know, hockey, there's so much lower body volume that takes place on the ice. You know, how do you address that in the weight room, or do you just try to maintain that max strength and reduce the amount of volume?
Yeah, and I think, you know, when I'm talking about lowering our power work in the weight room, I'm talking more like plyometric type stuff. We might do some medicine ball throws just to keep some rotational power going, but, you know, we take a lot of volume, basically all volume off of plyometrics and any kind of heavy Olympic lifts. But if we're going to do some weighted if we're going to do some weighted power work, we're doing that with the med balls just because it's, for us, it's easier to implement, and it gets the job done basically without having to load up joints in any kind of, you know, or put guys' wrists in a bad spot or anything like
right.
that. If we basically knock out hang cleans and stuff for the in season just because wrists get jacked up and
sure.
all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I think that's one of the biggest challenges with any kind of combative sport like football or hockey or, you know, rugby is, I mean, you know it, being a former player, and so do I, that, I mean, strength coaches, we love the weight room, but I hated lifting during the season. You probably didn't like yeah. it either. How do you combat that with your athletes? I mean, especially that stalwart, so the one that's scoring 2 or 3 goals a night, how do you attack that person and try to create the culture, the mindset that they need to train just as hard in the weight room as they are on the ice?
Yeah. And it's easier, I would say, with the team that I coach, because I have I'm with them a lot. I have a good relationship with them. They are completely bought into what we do. And they understand it. They've seen the improvement. And quite honestly, I do the most stuff. Like, I'll try stuff out for an entire summer session with them. And, you know, we went on a full off-season conditioning program this year and saw awesome improvements with the guys. So they're 100%. The right. tougher teams are the ones whose maybe their coach sent them up here, you know. So one thing that might be helpful to know is my facility is at the rink. It's at a rink, and it's the former facility for the U.S. national team development program for hockey. So we're at the rink, and it's separate but located at the rink.
Right.
So there are teams that play downstairs that come up for workouts, either pre or post practice. So when we have a high school team whose coach sent them up here, maybe I'm just meeting them for the first time, it's starting that relationship over again and helping them understand what it is that we do and why we do it.
Right.
And you know, there's always going to be some who are just like, whatever, I'm here. But majority of the time we get, good effort from the guys. So that's the high school kids. I think professionally, if I was in a different setting, if I was coaching, if I was a strength coach in the American League or even the NHL, it'd be a much, much different battle. You're on basically 22 different, different programs, different schedules. So that's a much different story. It's a lot harder to get guys who are not part of a uniform team program. It's a lot harder to get those guys to do it. Cause you gotta come to them. You gotta go to their level and you gotta be on top of them at all times. And I witnessed that sort of as a player. I never had a problem. Like if there was something that we were supposed to do after practice, I never had a problem doing it. Yeah, I think as a strength coach, it would be a real challenge because I also saw the guys were like, I'm good. No, thanks. Yeah. No, feeling all right today. That yeah. You go ahead and do your thing, you know. So you've seen that too.
Sure.
So, I mean, that's the struggle at that level. When you have the younger kids, they're still pretty compliant and everything. And it's easier to get them into the program and to see the benefits from the program. But when you got guys who have been doing things a certain way that have gotten them to a certain level, it's hard to break that mold.
Right. Well, let's switch gears a little bit. You know, you know, as an elite athlete, a professional athlete, you kind of had many different routes you could have gone. I mean, you could have been, you know, and you still do these things. I mean, you could have been a hockey coach, a sport coach. You could have been a strength coach. You could have gone into business and on its own. But you kind of combined all those things into this, you know, being an entrepreneur, you know, be it, you know, the website, you know, Hockey Strength and Conditioning or the podcast. Where was, you know, was did that happen naturally? Was that something that you intended to do, found you? Or, you know, and why that route as opposed to maybe the more traditional route where you're with a team and going that direction?
It's funny you ask that way because it literally did fall in my lap, and I wish I had a more inspirational business story. But somebody said, would you want to run training out of here? And I said, yeah, that would be fun. So like you would buy the equipment and stuff. And, oh no, it'd be your business. And I was like, right. Well, I don't know, man. So the pieces fell into place for me, and there happened to be a full gym's worth of equipment sitting around. That I was able to sort of, I guess, trade for. And so there was not a lot of capital needed up front, and sort of, I guess I was smart enough to take the opportunity and give it a shot. I guess if I'm giving myself credit for something, it would be that I've been smart enough to jump on opportunities, or I guess willing to jump on opportunities. Yeah, and the reason I didn't end up, honestly, I wanted to get back into collegiate athletics. I thought it would be more on the administrative side, like a academic advisor of some sort or whatever. But, you know, I didn't get into that world early. So, and then I played hockey for 7 years. So right. When I came back to look at that and think of that as an option, I hadn't done any kind of grad assistant. I hadn't done any kind of volunteering. In any sort of NCAA position. So it would have been a really tough road and a long road for me to get back into that world. I think it would have, you know, it would have been volunteering for a while. And then, you know, not that it would have been impossible, but it would have been a longer road. And so I knew I wanted to be in athletics, and I knew I wanted to help people get stronger. And I really like the NCAA world, but this was a nice way to sort of, it was a brand new challenge for me. So, kind of learned as much as I could about coaching, had, like I said, excellent people around me. It was pretty much a perfect situation to fall into where I got to learn from really good coaches and be around really good coaches and be associated with really good coaches. And that's what let my business take off from the beginning.
Right. I think it's one thing, you know, to have a knowledge as a player and then obviously a passion as a coach to create kind of a business. It's another thing to turn around and to try to improve the profession, contribute to the profession, put yourself out there as an authority in ways. And you've done that with, you know, obviously, again, being a co-owner of the website, the podcast. How did you kind of fight some of those probably early demons in your head saying, you know, who wants to hear me or why am I qualified to disseminate this information to the masses?
Well, I still feel like that. First of all,
so do I.
Yeah. but and I still remember the first, I sort of ended up randomly doing, I didn't know I was doing it. I randomly did a strength coach podcast with Anthony Renna, like 3 years ago. And I was only 2 years in and I was like, I hope we don't talk anything about training or, you know, like I'm not prepared to talk about this. I'm not an authority at this point. I'm still, you know, learning a lot here, but, I remember that moment being like, holy crap, I can't, you know, I don't know if I'm going to be able to keep up.
Right.
But I guess my mentality with the website is, you know, we put content on, we're responsible for all the content. We get a lot of stuff from friends, you know, in the National League and NCAA. But I guess when I do the podcast, especially the early ones, my mindset is ask a question and let them do the talking, you know. Yeah, right. Like I'm not even going to try to go toe to toe with anybody. I just want to hear from the guys that are really, really good. So we ask them a question, let them do their thing. And a lot of times you'll get a 15-minute, you ask the right question, you'll get a good 15-minute chunk where guys just go. And that's perfect for me. Like I don't, right. I'll interject where I can. And
sure.
I have a little bit different, you know, my experience comes from the player side. So that's pretty unique. And so, yeah, most of the time it's just talking to really smart people and letting them do the talking.
Right.
And then I'm a firm believer in that you're the average of the, you know, they say five people that you hang out with the most, but I say you're the average of the crowd that you run with.
Sure.
Which is why, you know, this podcast has been great because it allows me to call super smart people and just talk to them, you know, and have a conversation without it seeming weird or like I'm intruding or anything like that. So it's been really great in that way. And I would say it's pulled me, has really pulled me up in terms of my education, in terms of networking for sure. And in terms of, you know, it just helps to run the site because now we know more people and we get contributions from really, really good coaches.
Yeah. I think that's, you know, when I, you know, obviously I wrote a book on, you know, those three areas, you know, and entrepreneur being one of the categories to be successful. And in my mind, that's, you know, that's, it's the ability to kind of, to humble yourself and realize you don't have all the answers and that you're going to go and you're going to search for those and not having a concern about what other people think about you, you know? And I think that's the hurdle that you have to overcome because, you know, I think everybody, you, myself, Anthony Renna, you know, anybody of note, we all felt that way at some point, you know, in our career and still do in some ways, you know? And so, and you know, like I tell people all the time that when I wrote my book, I thought my mom would buy it. I know she would, maybe my wife, you know, and then, you know, maybe somebody else, but I didn't, you know, I think that, you know, everybody kind of has those insecurities sometimes, but the bottom line is that you're contributing, you know, and I think that that's what separates kind of the employee or the somebody that's just doing a job versus the professional, you know, when you're professional, you're contributing to, you know, to the body of work. And that sometimes that's in an interview style fashion where you're just kind of connecting people. Or, yeah. You know, asking questions, but then it leads to, you know, when you're drinking, you know, all that information through a fire hose, eventually you get to be pretty smart yourself, you know, yeah. and contribute as well. So
I think one of the things is if you're up front, I think the best guys in the business are up front and, like, look, I don't know it all, you know,
yeah,
totally. I'm here to learn from you. And if you're up front about that, then I think people respect that. So, you know, if you act like a know-it-all, chances are you don't, and you're fronting something. But if you're just there to learn, you know, like I see myself as there to learn, and I get to talk to some pretty smart people doing it. So
yeah, I agree with you. What's the best piece of coaching advice you ever received?
Best piece of coaching, I think actually it would just be like shut up and listen, right? Like, so yeah. I like to teach. My parents were both educators. And so for me, I was like doing more teaching and doing more talking and, you know, wanted to let everybody know why exactly we do this and whatever, but I wasn't listening to what they were actually asking. Right. So, just shut up and listen. That's been like, this year has been I usually at the end of every year, I'll do a blog, a word of the year. And this year, the word of the year is listen, you know, so you learn a lot, especially with the adults. It doesn't matter what my viewpoint is. It's listen to what they need and help them with that.
Sure. Give us a book, app, and website recommendation.
Book, just read The Power of Moments by Chip and Dan Heath. And it's a phenomenal read. It's an easy read. It's quick. And those guys always do a nice job of illuminating things with stories. And so right away, it's basically Power of Moments is basically about taking advantage of setting up and taking advantage of moments that are going to have an impact on people.
Yep.
And right away, I identified some things in my business where I'm like, duh, like, why not? Why am I not doing this?
Right.
So it's just an opportunities to make people feel good, to feel recognized, to feel special, which of course is really good for developing athletes. It's also really good for business. So
yeah, agreed.
What was the next one? Website?
App and website.
App. Okay, so app is it's a little bit different. This is unrollme.com.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Somebody already said that? Damn, I thought I'd have any.
No, I know it, but nobody said it. Yeah, that's good.
Okay. All right, so UnrollMe is somehow you go on, you link it to your email, and somehow it goes through and figures out all the subscriptions that you have, like all the email lists you're on. Gives you the opportunity to go through and say, take me off, like unroll, what's the word I'm looking for? Not unroll.
Unsubscribe.
Unsubscribe me and unsubscribe me for this one. Leave this one on my inbox or roll it up. And so when you roll it up, you get one email a day with however many roll-ups you have. Like I have probably 10 in each one. You get one email a day. It shows you a brief preview. You can look at it from there or just delete the thing in one shot. So yeah, huge time saver.
It is. Absolutely. I think you in your notes, you put Boomerang too, which is a good one.
Boomerang's another one I use. Yeah.
Boomerang is just, you can reschedule emails or, that, or and schedule.
Yeah. You can schedule emails. So if you think of something, you can type it up and send it out later. But the biggest use for me is especially if people reach out, I'm really bad about getting back to them, or I'll send an email back and say, hey, thanks for your interest. And this would be really useful for you too in sales. You can have it sent back to you in 2 days if they don't respond. So usually if I send out an email, it's off in the abyss and I'm counting on them to get back to me.
Right.
But with Boomerang, you tag it and if they don't respond, it comes back to you in 2 days. So you reach out again. So that's good too.
And then website.
I've been looking at Lift the Bar a lot lately.
Lift the Bar.
Yeah. And it's a, English or British group that puts this together, and there's some really good educational tools on there. There's a lot of stuff for business owners. I like a lot of Stephen Ledbetter stuff on that used to be on Habitry that's there now. It's more of like habit change stuff, which is huge in the private sector where you're helping adults and that kind of stuff. So Lift the Bar is a great educational resource, and they do a really nice job. Their experience is really nice across the board.
Well, that's good. Well, man, like I said earlier, I think, you know, it takes special people to invest the time, because I mean, you know, although you might make a little bit of money from a hockey strength and conditioning and a podcast and things like that, you know, it never equals the amount of time that goes into those types of resources out there. And I know what that's like, having done all the different things that I do. So I want to thank you for coming on the show, but then also thank you for contributing to the body of work and trying to make our profession better.
Oh, thank you. You said earlier you're at episode 235 or whatever. I think I'm at episode 60, so I got a ways to go to keep up with the contribution, but I appreciate that. Thanks.
No, awesome, man. Appreciate it.
That's it for this episode of Iron Game Chalk Talk. Thanks to this week's guest, as well as our sponsors, for bringing this episode to you for free. Make sure to check out ronmckeefrey.com, where you can join our mailing list, find the show notes, including all the links and resources mentioned, and information about Coach McKeefrey's other products. While you are there, please join Coach McKeefrey in the comments section thanking our guest for sharing. If you haven't subscribed to Iron Game Chalk Talk on YouTube or iTunes yet, make sure to do so. Comments, ratings, and reviews are always welcome. Coach McKeefrey can be found on Twitter at @rmckeefrey. On Facebook and YouTube at @ron.mckeefrey. That's it for this week. Be sure to check back next week for another great episode of Iron Game Chalk Talk.